When Queen City Chamber Opera left Siegfried, hero of the eponymous opera by Richard Wagner, he forged his father's sword, took off for the wider world, and you'd think that's that. But as Anna Russell would say, no fear. Queen City Chamber Opera presents Siegfried Act 2. Artistic director Isaac Selya is here, along with tenor Stephen Carroll, who sings Siegfried, and bass David Lee, who's singing the dragon Fafnir. Welcome back, everyone.
Thanks, Anne.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Isaac, tell us what happens in Act 2. There's a lot that goes on.
Act 2 is actually really good for Halloween time because it starts with a spooky forest scene. And in this forest, we have a cave, a scary cave. And inside, there's a dragon. And the dragon is Fafnir, who David is going to sing. And Fafnir starts the ring cycle as a giant, kind of a anthropomorphic humanoid thing. And then somehow he transforms himself into a dragon with the aid of a magical helmet and a ring. And then he just stays in the cave guarding his gold. And everybody in the opera wants the gold from the cave. So you got Alberich, the evil dwarf, who's kind of camped out waiting to see if he comes out. You got Wotan, king of the gods, waiting to see if he can somehow get it in there. Everybody wants Fafnir's gold.
And why is that?
It's the ring. Whoever has the ring can rule the world.
Stephen, you're off for the first scene. You don't show up. But what are the big challenges with this role?
He's a child. I mean, he's basically 13 years old. So trying to grasp that dramatically is pretty difficult. He's totally sheltered. The only person he has ever known in his life is Mime, one of the dwarves who has ill intentions throughout. And so grasping his naivete while I'm singing this really dramatic music, I think is going to be pretty difficult because we're doing a reduced orchestration, but it is still 45 musicians. So I think keeping him childlike in a way while giving my all to the singing is probably going to be challenging.
And it can be a physically demanding role as well, because having seen it when the Met last gave it a try, poor Jander Morris was scampering all over the place.
Yeah, but luckily we're doing just one act, so it's a good introduction.
And David, you play Fafnir, who is, as they say, I don't know how he's transformed himself into a dragon, but he has. So you're not seen for the first scene, or are you?
I'm not seen in Act 1 of Siegfried, but I am seen from sort of the beginning of, I'm sort of on stage, but asleep for the beginning of Act 2. And then eventually they wake me up, which is a terrible idea.
And why is it a terrible idea?
You don't want to wake the dragon, so to speak.
No, I don't think you do. Stephen referred to the orchestral demands, and Wagner orchestras are not known for their chamber size. Tell us about what reduced orchestration means.
In Wagner's time, he was writing for the biggest unheard of orchestra anyone had ever considered, and he had a special opera house he had built just to do his works in Bayreuth, which has a pit that descends like 70 feet, and usually they put the brass all the way at the back of that. In Wagner's time, he was writing for the biggest unheard-of orchestra anyone had ever considered, and he had a special opera house he had built just to do his works in Bayreuth, which has a pit that descends like 70 feet, and usually they put the brass all the way at the back of that. It's music that was written for a specific theater to have a huge orchestra. Not every theater can fit a 100-piece orchestra. So in Wagner's time, everyone wanted to perform his works, so other musicians did arrangements that cut it down to a more standard but still big orchestra size. So this is the size orchestra that you're usually dealing with when you do Beethoven or Brahms and other normal early romantic kind of composers. It still makes a big sound. It's still always a challenge to adjust the voices to what the orchestra is making. But usually Wagner's really good at cutting the orchestra away when the singers have something that they need to come through and sing.
And you have an extra challenge because you're not in a pit.
Exactly. Having the orchestra on the ground right there in front of the audience, which for most of the history of opera was the historical practice, like Mozart's time through Verdi's time, until Wagner really gave us the pit. That was what people did. So we're kind of dealing with the challenges that they dealt with in the period of making sure you can always listen, making sure the orchestra knows what's going on.
And tell us about some of the other cast members, because this isn't just about a dragon and a boy.
No, I mean, that's an important part of it. But there's also other ridiculous magical elements like a talking bird. So singing the role of the Waldvogel, the forest bird, we have the only female member of the cast, who is Alexandra Kasouf, graduate of CCM, who is going to not only sing the role, but dance it. Because when the bird first comes out, it's interacting with Siegfried, but he can't understand what it's saying. Until, spoiler alert, he kills the dragon and drinks its blood. And of course, when you drink the dragon's blood, you can understand what the bird says.
You're not making this up, I know.
Exactly. You can't make this up. singing the role of Mima the dwarf, we have M. Andrew Jones, also a CCM graduate, who sang it for us in the first act. And singing the role of Votan, god of oaths, we have Verdi baritone Dan Schofield, who recently sang Count Almaviva with Opera Columbus. And then singing the role of Albrecht, the dwarf, we have yet another Verdi baritone, Mike Young, also a graduate of CCM.
And what about the stagecraft? Have you had an opportunity yet to work with anything on the stage? Who's your director?
The director is a special surprise to be revealed. We've had some stage rehearsals going on. What I can tell you is that the design is by Lizzie Duquette, who designed our production of Abduction from the Seraglio. She's building a dragon. She's building an incredible forest and cave. We've had some rehearsals with the props because there's a campfire that's going on. There's swords and spears and rings and helmets. So we're slowly getting it up and on stage.
And for the two singers here, are these the first Wagner roles you've performed?
Yeah, I think for both of us, yeah.
And what are the special challenges? You mentioned some of them, Stephen. I'd like to hear from you, David.
Yeah, I think there's a preconception about Wagner, and especially when you have a sound in your ear with Wagner, I hear like Lebfrick, and I hear there are like all these amazing, great German basses, and you have that sound in your ear, and you want to imitate them. A lot of people talk about the orchestral demands. I haven't sung over the orchestra yet, so who knows? But it feels like even there's a lot of heavy Verdi that just feels just as heavy as Wagner. But the Wagner is, it's about what you expect and what you want to hear from that type of voice, if that makes sense. It's the color.
First time for you.
Yeah, the challenge, I think, for me is to just not push through it. I mean, luckily, just the one act, it's not going to be that much of an endeavor. The entire opera, honestly, I cannot fathom singing that. Having listened through it, seen some productions. I don't know how a human does it, but it happens.
Isn't it the longest sing for a tenor?
That or Parsifal. Parsifal might be a bit more, but yeah, they're up there. I mean, it's a huge, huge amount.
And they're both Wagner creations.
They are.
Well,
they
so Tristan's the one that allegedly has killed all sorts of tenors.
Yeah.
Who do it and then drop dead.
Nobody's planning to do that.
No.
I think the biggest challenge is to just trust. Trust in your technique. Trust that what you're doing is going to be heard, is going to work. And, you know, when that orchestra is blaring in front of you, not to get intimidated by that and just sing to the people.
And the Wagner Society is co-sponsoring this production. Mm-hmm. Tell us about their involvement.
So the Wagner Society, when people get into Wagner, they become crazy about Wagner. It overtakes you. Because, I mean, he didn't think he was just creating art. He thought he was creating a new world order and a religion. So the Wagner Society provides an incredible amount of passion. And there are a lot of people in Cincinnati who really want to come hear this. And they've also helped in spreading the word to the other Wagner societies. So hopefully we'll get some audience who will come in from other parts of the U.S. Who else is going to have a collection of spears and swords and helmets and rings in their basement? But Jim Sloofman, president of the Wagner Society.
You have two performances. You're going to be again at the Dunham Arts Center. And that has now become your home. Is that correct?
That's our home. I'd like to think of it as a undiscovered jewel in the Cincinnati art scene, although it's slowly becoming more and more well-known. On the west side, refurbished tuberculosis hospital, seats about 250, so you get pretty close to the action. You can see it in a way that you might not otherwise in a big hall.
Well, we wish you all the best for successful dragon slaying, but you'll survive, I know that. My guests have been the Queen City Chamber Opera's artistic director, Isaac Celia, tenor Stephen Carroll, and bass Dave Lee. There are two performances of Siegfried at Dunham Arts Center in Price Hill, Friday evening, October 23rd, and Sunday, October 25th. You can find out more at wvxu.org/AroundCincinnati. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Ann Ehrenstein.